Welcome to Social Distance Central. Wait, that's what this is now? You're on Sportsnet 650. Here's Bit Nizar and Brendan Batchelor.
Welcome to Social Distance Central. It's the show with the COVID name that isn't about COVID. During the COVID era, I am Bick Nizar, and with me is the voice of your Vancouver Canucks on Sportsnet 650, the home of the Canucks. It's Brendan Batchelor. Batch, how's it going?
It's good. I'm very happy to be with the most unsung host on Sportsnet 650, Bick Nizar, here today.
I was so mad about that yesterday. The whole unsung award that JT Miller got, which, hey, man, congratulations to him.
I'm not mad about it. I just think it's hilarious. Like,
no, look, how can you be unsung?
Someone explain this to me, because no one has been able to accurately explain this to me without moving the goalposts. How can your leading scorer be unsung?
I'm not mad at that he got the award. Like, good for him, all that. I'm mad at, like, the process to get there, because it's a fan vote. And I demand accountability. That's all. So
you demand satisfaction.
I just demand accountability. It's like the people who voted for this, I want to know who you are, because I can't trust you anymore. That's all it is.
Well, either that or, you know, we need to buy you a dictionary so that you understand that unsung isn't – like the definition of unsung is not –
uncelebrated.
Like, the definition of unsung is not the best guy that I wasn't able to pick for another award, so I'm going to pick him for this one. Like, that I think, is how most people define this, is they went into the voting, and they went, okay, maybe I'm going to vote Markstrom as MVP. I'm going to vote Pettersson as most exciting. I'm going to vote Hughes, top defenseman. Oh, but I didn't get to vote for JT Miller for anything. Well, I've got to put him for unsung, because he's clearly unsung if I didn't pick him for any of the other awards. No! That's not what unsung means. It's not. The definition
of ruined fan voting.
Yeah, I mean, fan voting is what it is. But I just found it funny that so many people, like, if there are people out there that legitimately think that JT Miller was unsung this season, we want to hear from you. Tweet me at Batch Hockey, at Big 650. Yeah. Text us 650-650, because, like, to me, the conversation around this guy all year long was, wow, he's really good. Maybe that was a good trade, right? Like, there were people that were critical of the trade and critical of management for making the trade. But has anybody been critical of JT Miller's performance on the ice? Because if so, I would like to meet them.
It's been constant.
He's been one of their best players.
That praise has been constant. And more importantly, if someone feels that he truly is unsung and they didn't hear enough about him, you know what, man? That's an indictment on me. That's an indictment on us. That maybe we just didn't talk about JT Miller enough, because and maybe we didn't, because NHL.com comes out with this list today of that Super 16 they've been doing for the centers, the wingers, the goalies, or the D-men, the goalies. And we got mad when Pettersson wasn't there. We got mad when Markstrom wasn't high enough. And JT Miller wasn't on the list today. We'll get to that. A lot going on. Because I thought today was all going to be about Judd Brackett, baby. And then
I was going to say, how have we done 4 minutes of the show without mentioning Judd Brackett's name?
So, Bohorat meets with media today, so we're going to talk about that. Obviously, the JT Miller stuff. We'll reset Game of Takes. A lot going on. Andrew Berkshire is going to join us in like 90 seconds here. So, we'll get to the Judd Brackett stuff. So, if you missed it, I know you're nauseated. How much we talk about this, and, man, going back to January. But a conclusion to the story, once again, it already concluded 9 days ago when his contract ran out with the Vancouver Canucks. It took 9 days for Judd Brackett to find new employment, and it just so happens it's the team the Canucks are facing on August 1st. He is agreed to be the director of amateur scouting for the Minnesota Wild.
Yeah, and, you know, this is not going to have any impact on the playoffs. It's not like Judd Brackett is taking intel from the coaching staff over to Minnesota. It's just funny. It's just so Canucks, right? That the one team that he goes to happens to be the team that you're getting set to face in a playoff series. But, you know, other than that, you know, there was a strong belief that Judd Brackett would find a job I'm a little bit surprised he found one this quickly, but hey, good on him. And it sounds like he gave serious consideration to going to Seattle as well, which would have been basically the only other team that you could draw up right now and be like, of course he would go to Seattle. They're going to be the Canucks' biggest rivals. I would say that, maybe the only other team you could throw in this mix was if he went to Chicago to become their amateur scouting director or something like that. But in the end, it's a good scout finding a job. It's not going to have an impact on the series. It's just, it's just kind of funny and kind of very Canucky, if you can say it that way, that that Judd Brackett ends up in Minnesota.
What is the power ranking for most annoying destinations? It's probably Boston, Chicago, Seattle.
Well, I don't know if the hate on isn't there for Seattle yet, but it will be, right? So you know,
but if the first marker was thrown, it would go from 0 to 100. Like, as soon as the first time Canucks fans feel wronged by Seattle, it's going to go real quick.
Yeah, absolutely, it will. And Judd Brackett could have been that first line in the sand, but he goes to the Minnesota Wild instead, and will join Bill Guerin in the front office there.
So it's a longer conversation. We'll get into it later on in the show. 650, if you want to get in early and get your thoughts in. And we'll get to them later because Andrew Brookshire will join us in just a couple of minutes here. So we don't want to start it and have to stop it. But we should get to a couple of things that maybe Bo Horvat said and a couple of your texts as well. So this one's from Scott from Langley. I scoffed at JT getting unsung hero. I voted for Tanner Pearson. People don't seem to know what unsung means. He was sung like Pavarotti sings opera. That's Scott from Calgary.
Attaboy, Scott.
We do now have Andrew Brookshire on the line from Sportsnet. Follow his work at Andrew Brookshire on Twitter and also his great work at sportsnet.ca. Burke, long time no talk. How's it going?
Pretty good, guys. Pretty good. I'm just, chilling inside the house. It's 41 degrees here in Montreal.
Oh, wow. Fantastic. Okay, so we want to talk on about these playoff series that are coming up because you do great work with the analytics and really in-depth, honest previews. How difficult is for you trying to project what this upcoming tournament might be like when you consider, the volatility of a play-in round and then just in general, this layoff?
Yeah, it's real, real tough. Like, I've been asked by Rudy Galen, my editor at Sportsnet, to do a few different things, and I'm like, man, I don't know necessarily how to cover certain things. This is probably the most difficult playoff to approach that I've ever looked at. Just because there's not just volatility in the play-in round, it's the long layoff, who gets the benefit from the rest, who comes back rusty. It's hard to project that. And then there's who could test positive and be held out, who might have a pre-existing condition that decides not to play at the last minute, or somebody who has a kid born and decides that they need to stay home with their wife and newborn. There's so many things that could change last minute. And then it's just what part of the season should we really look at that would be predictive of now? Would it be, the last 25 to 30 games before the season was put on pause? Or is it the whole season? How much is October representative of hockey that's going to be played in August? Sure, the rosters are the same, but things can change so much. I think one thing that I look at that might be the biggest factor that's hard to project is how much better are young rookies going to be? We saw how great Quinn Hughes was this year. We've seen now for 2 years with Elias Pettersson, but they've had now months to just kind of sit around and work it out, hone their skills a little bit, get stronger. They're going to come in. They're going to be the guys that aren't going to feel the rust, I think. It's the older guys, they'll be mentally prepared and they'll know what it takes and they'll shake it off quickly. But I think it's tougher to get back into it when you're a little bit older. Those young guys, I feel like those are going to be the ones that really take over these playoffs and make the big impacts early, especially early on. And I'm really interested to see if we see the kind of things that you expect from a third season from Elias Pettersson to show up, or a sophomore season from Quinn Hughes, just as you big leaps in their game that not wouldn't have necessarily happened if the playoffs would have proceeded on schedule. And I find that incredibly interesting. I think it's going to be must-see TV. I just don't know how to project it at all.
Well, and when it comes to the style of play and the way the games are played, it may resemble much more what we see at the start of a season because these guys have had all this downtime. Is there a way for you to quantify or to provide insight into how different games are when we play a regular season between, say, when the season starts in October and when the playoffs start in April, and what some of the differences we might see in these games in the style of play could be? Because, you know, we know from watching past seasons that certainly intensity ratchets up over the season. Teams get their systems together more. And the games that we see in March are often quite different than the ones we see in October.
Yeah, absolutely. And I actually wrote about this kind of on for Sportsnet.ca about specifically looking at how goal scoring trends change over the course of the season. And unfortunately, over the last two seasons, things really evened out a lot. There wasn't a lot of variation between each month of the season. But typically over the last 10 years, October is the highest scoring month of the season. Then November is actually the lowest scoring, as it seems like every coach is like, whoa, stop that. No, this is too sloppy, too disorganized. We're going to hammer down and play defense. And just the last 2 weeks of the season, there's this huge drop-off as every team that's in the playoff hunt just really tightens things up, right? And then you get into the playoffs and, things kind of even out, but there's not as much scoring. But what I found really interesting was that even strength scoring stays about the same and even goes up towards the end of the season. Teams get better at breaking each other's defensive schemes down at even strength. So over the last 2 years, there's just been this, you don't see it if you look at it from an all situations perspective, but each month the even strength scoring goes up a tiny, tiny little bit. And then the special team scoring goes down a little bit. And it's because as the season goes on, fewer and fewer power plays are called. It's not that teams are getting worse in the power play as the season goes on. That's been the big driver of the change in goal scoring as seasons go on. So I wonder how the NHL wants to approach officiating for these playoffs, because I think that is highly correlated to how much scoring we'll see. So that really interests me. Are they going to do a beginning of the season crackdown and remind all these guys that this is how you have to play and you can't be cheating all the time? Or is it just going to be playoffs as usual and it's going to be sloppy and no penalties are called and it's just going to be a total mess?
Well, the other thing you could build off with that conversation too is how is the officiating going to be impacted by a lack of fan attendance? And, most referees would tell you that doesn't have any sort of impact. But, when you've got 20,000 people booing you, it would be hard for any person not to react to that in some way, shape or form. So, for a team like the Canucks, who had one of the top power plays in the league, where the NHL decides to go with that officiating could really define their ability to have success in the playoffs, couldn't it?
Absolutely. And the other thing is that these teams, as much as they've had off time, it's not like they've been together with their coaching staffs and able to, work on their weaknesses. So the weaknesses that teams have shown throughout the season should theoretically still be pretty much the exact same, right? If you struggle defending off the rush, like the Canucks do, then you're probably going to still have that weakness. And there's just not a lot of time, especially not practice time, with these protocols that they have to follow right now, where you have limited amounts of players on the ice. It's much tougher to get these high intensity practices with everyone going. It's very interesting to me that working on your own game is going to be very difficult. It's going to be very geared towards trying to figure out the opponent, which, the playoffs always is. But the half of coaching has to be about your own game too. And it's going to be tough to see, how coaches balance that. And I wonder if it's going to be a situation where, like with the Canucks power play, you just kind of lean into your strengths and you're like, okay, we're going to really have carries. Let's draw a lot of penalties. Let's force the issue, play with speed, try to get these guys hooking as much as they can. And that's the way that you've got to play, right? It'll be very interesting to see how different teams handle that. I think we might see, you know, like a more varied style of hockey between different teams than we've seen in recent years. At least I hope so. I think this is poised to be an extremely interesting playoffs with different looking hockey than we've seen in a long time, if that makes sense.
Well, and you know, you talk about the coaching perspective. What about a guy like Dean Evason, who, you know, hadn't had a ton of time as the head coach of the Minnesota Wild? Is there a chance that he comes in and tries to install some different systems and we see a very different Minnesota Wild team than we've seen in the past? Or is he just not going to have enough time to do that? Like, you know, from a Canucks series perspective, that'll be fascinating to see what exactly this Minnesota Wild team looks like when the puck drops at the end of the month.
Yeah, that's one thing. Like, I know I haven't spoken with him directly, but I've spoken to other members of the media in Montreal, and they spoke with Claude Julien when he took over in the middle of the season, and he pretty much laid it out that, like, in the middle of the year, there's not much that you can change. You can kind of be a different voice in the room and, you know, give different players a shot in different spots and get them going, and sometimes if players have tuned out a coach, that's enough to get them going and playing their best, but there's just not enough time and not enough practice time to instill big changes in the system. You can change little things like, you know, like where a player should be on the breakout and try to like change their muscle memory a little bit. But it's far more likely if you try to change things a lot that you're going to get a bunch of mistakes than it is that you'll improve the team. So that comes with the next training camp kind of thing. So I would assume that we will see the Minnesota Wild that we are accustomed to, with maybe different players getting more ice time or less ice time, more power play time, things like that. Maybe a shift towards more of the younger players. It seemed like, I think Kevin Fiala was having a breakout season, so lots of him out there, I would assume.
Andrew Berkshire joining us here on Social Distance Central on Sportsnet 650. Okay, we've talked about the things that we are uncertain on. You did mention something that you know, do know, that the Canucks defending off the rush. How does that play in part to Minnesota and how they create off the rush? What do your numbers tell you about that?
Well, I got to tell you, when I was looking through for Sportsnet a few weeks ago and looking at the winners and the losers of the way that this play-in round was set up, the Canucks were definitely the team that I thought were the biggest losers here. They went from, you know, a playoff spot guaranteed to facing a team that underperformed most of the season only due to goaltending. Devan Dubnyk was terrible this year, like probably the worst goaltender in the league when you factor in how good the Wild are defensively. So that could, you know, remain the same. Dubnyk could just be terrible and the Canucks could walk over the Wild easily, or he could do that goalie thing where a terrible goalie has, you know, four or five good games in a row and the Wild could be an incredibly tough challenge for the Canucks, because the Canucks, they started the year out really positively by the underlying numbers. And I know I wrote about it a couple times that I was surprised at how big the change was for them. And, you know, like how big of a change having Quinn Hughes available to them is, and sophomore season from Pettersson. But over the course of the year, they wore down at even strength and relied more and more on their power play. And one consistent issue that they had was off the rush, both for and against. They were the team that I believe at the point that the season was paused, they generated the fewest scoring chances in the league off the rush and the most against off the rush. So that's something that another team can focus on and say, okay, this is the place where we can hit these guys up. And we saw a team that was smartly coached, like the Colorado Avalanche last year, where they were up against the heavily favored Calgary Flames. And the Flames were good at attacking off the rush, but pretty mediocre at defending. And the Avalanche just decided to play a high-speed rush game, and they blitzed them. And it wasn't even close in that series. It was incredible the degree to which they outplayed the Calgary Flames, who were a bit slower of a team. And I don't think the Canucks are slow. I don't think that's their issue. But if the Minnesota Wild can adapt their style a little bit and start attacking off the rush, I do think that the Canucks could be in serious trouble. Then again, goaltending, you know, so much is up in the air about that.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, talking about these, you know, different styles and traits that teams have, when you look at it from that perspective and from the underlying numbers of which teams trend well in each parts of the game, what do you think is the most compelling of the play-in series in terms of a tactical matchup between two teams?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I love the Penguins-Canadians matchup because the Canadians are a team that on paper by the analytics should have been a team this year, and things just didn't work out for them. They generate chances better than anyone except for the Carolina Hurricanes, but they just don't have very many high-end goal scorers, and they weren't able to finish a lot of those chances. And then Carey Price had long stretches of poor play, and that really just took them out of it, right? So are they going to get a nice little bit of luck in the first round and have Carey Price play well and then score on a higher percentage of their opportunities than they normally would have? And then all of a sudden the Penguins, who are, again, on paper, the superior team, in a bit of trouble, because the Penguins, you know, they were a team that they changed starting goaltenders this year. They had their struggles too. So they're a very good team. They have the star power that the Canadians don't, but they're not, you know, the world-beating team that they were a couple of years ago. They've lost some depth. They have some injuries that may return, may not. So it's very up in the air. And I think Claude Julien is a very underrated coach. I think people kind of get down on him here because the Canadians have missed the playoffs, but he just hasn't had the rosters the last few years. So I think it's really interesting to see if the Canadians' speed and aggression game can match up well against the Penguins.
A couple more minutes here with Andrew Berkshire of Sportsnet, joining Bick Nizar and Brendan Batchelor. So as we look just beyond, you know, the games and, you know, kind of the landscape we're in, because I do like talking to you about team building and everything like that. When we look at this flat cap that's coming in for 2 years, and obviously some teams are going to have some challenges, who to you is most primed to, you know, pounce on potential opportunities? And I guess what's going to be an inefficiency that we should be looking at as teams try to figure out how to live in this flat cap world?
Well, it would really suck if a team had a goaltender that they traded away that retired on them early and they got hit with a cap recapture penalty. So that would really be unfortunate. But as you know, that would never happen.
No.
Yeah, there are definitely some teams out there. Again, the Montreal Canadiens have a ton of cap space that they just have refused to use for the last several years. So they could be a team that could pounce on it. I am so unclear on how things really work with the cap, though, because it seems like every year a team like the Toronto Maple Leafs is over the cap, and that somehow Brandon Pridham is able to negotiate a situation where they're like saving a couple bucks every day, and at the end of the season they're under the cap. It's crazy to see how different teams that are up against it negotiate those situations and find loopholes and, you know, put a guy on waivers on the right day and save a ton of money down the stretch. So I never count teams that are up against the cap out if they have, you know, a smart person in there running the money game for them, because, you know, even when the cap first came in, I'm sure you guys remember the Philadelphia Flyers had like three or four old bad players on somewhat sketchy long-term injured reserve situations. And it seemed like they had that going for like the first 10 years of the cap. And space under the cap.
He is Andrew Berkshire. Follow him on Twitter at Andrew Berkshire, and also check out his work at sportsnet.ca. Berk, thank you very much, man.
My pleasure. Talk to you guys soon.
Fascinating insights there from Andrew Berkshire, especially on the way the Canucks and Wild series match up. And look, it's going to be fascinating. Because we haven't seen hockey in some time. B, you know, we talked to Wes Walls, and he was very much adamant about the idea of the youth versus the age for the Minnesota Wild. It would be an issue for Minnesota because, you know, those young legs can get going quick, and styles of play, styles make fights. And here's Andrew talking about how the Canucks create and give up off of the rush, and can a team hone in on that and force you to be something you're not?
Yeah, to me, the most interesting part of what Andrew had to say in relation to the Canucks is something that we'll all be excited to see too, is are we getting sophomore season Quinn Hughes? Are we getting third season in the league Elias Pettersson? You know, can these guys have big jumps in their game? Because if that's the case, and, you know, I'm not going to sit here and call the Canucks a Stanley Cup contender by any means in terms of one of those teams you put in the mix where you expect them to be in the conference finals. But this is a team that could win a round or two. You know, if they have these players take their game to yet another level, if the style of play does trend towards suiting younger players as well, like, why couldn't the Canucks beat the Minnesota Wild? Why couldn't they win another series if they're going well, if they get good goaltending? And that to me is what is most exciting about, you know, certainly it's exciting the Canucks are going to be playing win or go home playoff games again. That is it without a doubt. But the fact also that maybe things set up even better for the Canucks than regular Stanley Cup playoffs would this year, where because of Pettersson and Hughes potentially taking leaps in their game, because of the circumstances with all this time off, like, the Canucks might be able to take advantage of this opportunity and go deeper than they might otherwise have been able to had the season continued on as it was regularly going to.
He is Brendan Batchelor. I'm Bick Nizar. It is Social Distance Central. We welcome your thoughts. 650, 650. Keep the text coming in. Just a heads up, game it takes, we're going to do tomorrow. A lot going on today with the bracket stuff, Horvat meeting with media, JT Miller's unsung hero, JT Miller snubbed by NHL.com. So we're going to move game it takes to tomorrow. We'll hear the takes then, and you will get to vote on it over the weekend. So a lot more still to come here on Social Distance Central on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back, Social Distance Central, home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Bick Nizar and Brendan Batchelor here with you for the next hour. Before Reach Deep, where Dan Riccio will be dropping the Taylor Hall is worse than JT Miller takes. That's all coming up on Reach Deep in a bit. We'll touch on that in just a minute. But the big news of the day, at least what started the day, it's been a busy day for Canucks Nation. Judd Brackett lands in Minnesota as their new director of amateur scouting. Obviously a prolonged story leading to his departure here in Vancouver. Kind of became a deity to some degree of he can do no wrong to some levels. And, you know, worthy of a lot of praise, of course. But it became a very hot topic in the city that winds up having a conclusion today with him landing in Minnesota. So I guess the question, Batch, is how long until the Minnesota Wild win a Stanley Cup?
Well, I mean, maybe they pick first overall. Wouldn't that be like, again, talking about it being the most Canucky thing possible.
Like, big win today for Team Tank. Like, yeah. If you were Team Tank, which, by the way, that's our game it takes coming up tomorrow, is Team Tank or Team Playoffs, basically. But if you were Team Tank, you got a big case to make today because the Canucks winning helps Minnesota. Can you really let Judd Brackett have a shot at top pick?
Well, and that's what I was going to say, is imagine a world where the Canucks beat the Minnesota Wild. The Minnesota Wild get the first pick, and who's there on the stage at the draft or on Zoom on the at the draft, however they're going to do the draft, announcing the first overall pick for the Minnesota Wild? It's Judd Brackett. Like, that to me is almost like perfect in how awful it would be from a Canuck fan perspective. Like, if you're someone out there that believes that what can go wrong for the Canucks will go wrong, that basically is your nightmare scenario right there.
I mean, that's basically Canucks fandom to some degree as well. Believing what can go wrong will go wrong.
Well, and you know, when you've gone through, you know, multiple decades of the team struggling and,
well, I think
losing in Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final twice and never finding a way to get over the hump, that would be it, wouldn't it? You can understand why some fans feel that way.
I do, but I feel like there's a condition to believe that the sky is always falling. It's like they're like listening to Fox News and perpetually living in fear. And then it's just like, oh, okay, it's going to go wrong. And then when it does go wrong, it's like, told you, no good can ever happen is a lifestyle at times for Canucks fans. Whereas, hey, man, like Elias Pettersson was drafted. Pavel Bure did play for this team, et cetera, et cetera. There are good examples of things happening, but perpetually living in fear seems to be the way of life. I did want to touch on this, too, because we were joined about a month ago. So for those that are, you know, maybe linking, it was like, oh, Judd Brackett trying to stick it back to the Canucks right away and landing with the Minnesota Wild. We spoke to NHL insider Elliot Friedman about a month ago, and he kind of alluded to what Judd Brackett's destination could be. Here's Elliot on the program from a month ago.
The rumors are that one of the teams that is interested would be Minnesota. They've already let a couple of guys go. Paul Fenton had a big say in their draft table there. I could see that potentially being a possibility. It makes sense.
So, you know, the destinations we talked about, and, you know, Elliot's plugged in more than anyone, so he was on top of it for some time. We heard about Seattle a little bit, but Minnesota makes a lot of sense because they've made some changes there too, obviously, with Bill Guerin recently taking over. So, this is fantastic news for Judd Brackett. It's good to see him have a quick transition to get back on his feet. But the destination was kind of rumored for some time.
Yeah, this isn't a revenge narrative here, right? Although, can we call the Minnesota-Vancouver series the Judd Brackett revenge series? Like, is that a narrative we can build in now like we would with a former player?
The rivalry is back on.
Yeah. But, you know, to be honest, yeah, I understand people that are upset that Judd Brackett left the organization. Certainly, when you have an amateur scouting director that's been a part of some great selections and your team lets that person leave, you absolutely have the right to be unhappy. But to build this out any more than the guy found another job, good for him, he's going to Minnesota, to me is trying to push a square peg into a round hole.
I shall push, man. I shall push. it's Vic Nizar and Brendan Batchelor. Bo Horvat met with Vancouver media today, and they also joined Scott Rintoul on the Scott Rintoul Show, which you can listen to that full interview online at sportsnet.ca/650. He said some pretty interesting stuff, Batch. You were on the call. Just your main takeaways?
Yeah. Obviously, you feel for the guy because he's going through a tough time right now where he had to leave his newborn son at a week old to return. And it sounds like he's living for FaceTime and Zoom chats right now because not only is he back here, but he's back here quarantining after flying back from out east. But at the same time, as much as, you know, I'm sure he's having a tough time missing his family, he was very quick to dispel any notion that he ever thought about opting out or missing this opportunity. And, you know, he was talking a big game, and you love to hear it from a guy on your team saying that, you know, I'm going to miss my family now, but at the end of this, hopefully I can take my son and put him in the Stanley Cup. And so it's good to hear that level of confidence from the team's captain. And, you know, while he is missing his family, he seems pretty excited as well to get going against the Wild in this series.
Yeah, he did talk about, you know, the adjustment, getting ready for the playoffs, and his excitement was kind of matched with his quote of he didn't expect rust to be there when these playoffs start. Well, we'll let him speak. Here's Bo Horvat talking about the adjustment for the playoffs, or lack thereof, when he met with media earlier today.
I don't know if it'll take guys very often to, or very, very long to adjust, to be honest with you. I think everybody keeps in great shape during the summers anyway. And I think everybody's going to be so ramped up and so excited to get things going again that guys are going to be going 100 miles an hour out there. And I think it's going to be really good hockey. Like, everybody's teams are going to be healthy and have all their guys back for the majority. And, it's going to be, I think, one of the toughest Stanley Cups playoffs there's going to be, for sure.
We have talked about this, Batch, and he made a point of, you know, everyone's going to be healthy, but also, like, the training camps are going to be so much longer than these guys are normally used to, that the rust, you would hope, wears off there, and they, you know, have an exhibition game, and by the time the play-in round starts, you know, your minus expectation is it should be pretty close to what we saw in February and March.
Yeah, it could be. You know, as we were talking about with Andrew Berkshire in the previous segment, I do still think that there will be an element of the hockey that will look more like early season hockey than late season hockey, just because, you know, you can stay in great shape and you can have a 10-day training camp and you can be ready to go, but things like your timing and yeah. your communication with your teammates and reading and reacting off guys in a game scenario, that stuff will still be affected, but it's going to be affected for everyone. So could we see more scoring? I think there's a chance that we could. Could we see more mistakes that lead to scoring chances and goals? Certainly, I think that's a possibility too. But in that regard, it's a level playing field. In terms of the intensity, in terms of you know, watching these games on TV, they're not going to look noticeably different than what we would normally see from you know, the Stanley Cup playoffs, other than the fact that there won't be fans. Where some of that stuff will bear out will be less so in the eye test, I think, and more so in the underlying numbers of the way the games are played.
Also, the one thing I took, actually, two quotes really stood out for me. We'll play them both here. One, you know, as we're getting ready to see what these lines look like and everything, and we did see the success that Tyler Toffoli had with Elias Pettersson. And so it would stand to reason of where Brock Besser would go in the lineup. And it looks like it would be with Bo Horvat, which we briefly saw. And so he was asked what Brock Besser has to give. And he was very honest about it. Here's Bo Horvat's thoughts on what Brock has to prove when the play resumes.
I think Brock is—he definitely hasn't hit his ceiling. I think he's got a lot more to prove, and I think he knows that too. And I don't think we've seen the best of Brock Besser. And but obviously, if we get the chance to play with him, then I think he's going to come to play in the playoffs. He scores big goals, and he's played in the playoffs before in college. And you know, I think he wants to prove to everybody too that he can have a great playoffs, and I think me, him, and Pierce, if that's going to be the line, can really do some damage.
That's a line or a combination that we've seen obviously work back when, you know, when Brock was with Bo and Sven Bjerke, and there's been some calls to have them combo once again. I feel like it should work. Right, their styles of play do kind of work well together. Bo being the more direct, get to the net kind of guy, and Brock can kind of work off of that. And it's interesting for him to say he's still got a lot more to prove.
But at the same time, I think we can all agree with that, and I think Brock would probably agree with that too. That the injuries he's faced to this point in his career have meant that he hasn't hit the heights that many people thought he would, or that many people thought he could, or even that he thought he could, right? Like, you know, could this guy be a 35-40 goal scorer? There is the absolute chance that that could happen. He just hasn't had a chance to play an 82-game season yet in his career. And he's another player who, you know, he's not as young as Pettersson and Hughes, but he's still a very young player. Mm-hmm. So, A, could this long pause help him just getting healthy and not having to go through the grind of the playoffs after the season? And could he come in refreshed and in the best shape he's been in a while? Absolutely, that's a possibility. And then also, could Brock Besser take a big step in his game, just like we're talking about with Hughes and Pettersson, and, you know, find a way to be a really big offensive contributor for this group? That is also absolutely possible. So, you know, to say that Brock Besser hasn't hit his ceiling yet, I don't think is taking anything away from what Brock Besser has done already. To me, it's just saying, you know, this guy's good, but man, he could be even better. And, you know, that should be a positive potential prospect here for Canuck fans heading into this playoffs, is that, you know, all of these young guys, we could see right in front of our eyes them take massive strides in their careers. And that's why I talk about, while you still don't necessarily put the Canucks as a contender for the Stanley Cup, they are pretty well suited with some of the young guys that they have to potentially go farther in these playoffs than they might have otherwise.
They're just frisky enough to be an annoyance to teams, right? Because they've got enough of a upside that they can score with a lot of teams, obviously. It's can they just tweak the defending enough, because they've got the good spine in net with Jacob Markstrom, that you know they can make life difficult for any number of teams. Can they be consistent in that throughout a series? And to be honest, the conversation about Brock, I briefly mentioned it last night on the program with Andrew Walker, just like, to me, he's kind of in the conversation for that unsung hero. He had as many points as Tanner Pearson in less games. And I think his defensive work gets unnoticed because the demand on his goal scoring. And when the goal scoring is not there, suddenly it looks like he's not contributing. But he had a lot of points this year. Of course, he can give more. But his overall playmaking and his defensive contributions, to me, have been noticed. And I do think they went unnoticed from the fan base just because they want to see that red light go on, you know, when he's got the puck on his stick.
Yeah, but that's stuff that won't go unnoticed by the coaching staff. And
sure.
And you know, you're right. I hadn't thought of Brock Besser as an unsung hero candidate, but you know, to me, he is in that conversation because as much as he is one of the Canucks' best young players, and you know, let's be honest, he's one of the best young players in the league. Mm-hmm. The fact is that you know, Pettersson and Hughes are kind of, you know, have stolen the headlines, and he kind of flies under the radar a little bit, it feels like, certainly compared to his rookie season before those other two were playing on the team. But yeah, you know, he could be a huge part of whatever the Canucks are able to do here. He could take massive strides in his game. And, you know, just because the strides we've seen him take in his game haven't been offensive or haven't resulted in more goals doesn't mean that he's not improving as a player. And I agree. I think his defensive game came leaps and bounds this past year. And another thing I want to touch on that we got into it with Andrew briefly, Andrew Berkshire, who joined us earlier in the show, talking about how teams likely won't, you know, overhaul their systems just because they're not going to have enough time. That said, though, they will have an opportunity to tweak because, as you point out, a 10-day training camp is about three times as long as a normal training camp.
Right. Yeah.
Right. So you can spend the first 3 days all on conditioning, and then you can spend the last six on your systems and on instilling the way you want your guys to play. And certainly the Canucks need to be better defensively. And Travis Green has even talked about the fact that, you know, he has focused a lot on, you know, ways that his team can be better defending and keeping puck possession rather than turning the puck over during this pandemic, because, you know, that's what these coaches have had time to do, is watch video and analyze their teams. So who's to say that this coaching staff won't be able to instill some changes? You know, they might not be wide sweeping changes in terms of the system, but that's also another intriguing possibility. What if this Canucks team can come out and just be better defensively? If they could, like, even marginally better defensively, could have a huge impact on you know, their hopes of going far in the playoffs this year.
Yeah, we made that point all throughout the season. It's the way they're playing right now, at least the way they're scoring right now, to have success to get to the playoffs, because that's when we were leaving in February and March, they didn't need to be top 10 in defense. That's a standard you want to have moving forward, of course. But if they were just league average in defending, suddenly their efficiency and how they play would skyrocket, but they gave up a lot of chances. They gave up a lot of shots. At times, you know, sometimes the shot metrics looked more unfavorable than the actual chances that they gave up. But by and large, if that just gets to a league average state, they suddenly become a far more potent team. And it's a good point that it goes to some of the uncertainty of what we're going to see when we come back. Because I do agree, and we've talked about it with IMAC, and we've heard Travis Green talk about it, just it's not as if the coaches went on pause for this entire stoppage. They've been working, and you do kind of treat it like a season break, and you look at what worked, what didn't, and you can try to make some changes moving forward. So that's why I kind of feel like we are going to see, you know, some pretty intense hockey right out of the gate, because you know, guys going to be whipped into shape and be ready to go. I want to get to a couple of texts here. So we're talking about Brock. Dan texting in, 650. 2 years ago, Horvat, Besser, Berchi were our first line. So Bo and Brock on a second line now with Pearson is pretty solid. That was also Brock's rookie year when he looked lethal. So fingers crossed they click again. And Jordan from Saskatoon says, I agree with your take on Besser, Batch. I said something along that line too on Game of Takes, which we will debut again tomorrow or re-bring up tomorrow as we're looking for potentially a new champion to take on Nick Dragon, and who sits top the composite throne right now. A lot more tomorrow here on Social Distance Central. We were going to play this clip on Bo Horvat talking about the cap, but we only got about 90 seconds here to get into everything. So I guess we'll save that for tomorrow. But the one thing you did touch on, and I kind of want to play it back here, is how these players are kind of approaching getting ready for this playoff series. Here's Bo Horvat talking about, you know, for him, even in this difficult time, having a kid and all that during a pandemic, he never really thought about opting out. So here's the full quote from Bo Horvat. And I think we'll see this across the league as we get ready for this vote and players get their opportunity to opt out. Just here's Bo Horvat's thoughts on why he never considered it.
Not one time have I ever thought about opting out. No, I want to be there for my teammates. I want to be there, you know, when the season, you know, gets going, and be a part of winning here. And but the whole being there for the birth and trying to figure out when I'm going to join the team during camp, because her due date wasn't usually or wasn't scheduled till the 14th of July, so it was going to overlap some things. So still trying to figure that out all the way up until the day he was born. So I'm happy he came a little earlier and he's healthy and doing well, and I got to spend the week with him and Hall before I came out here.
So I think that's going to be like a uniform thing you hear across the league of players opting out. We've had the conversation of, you know, how do teams approach it or players approach their teammates if someone does. I don't know. I feel like Bo Horvat was in the tier of people who probably had the toughest of decisions, and he's made the decision to come back.
Yeah, and you know, I'll be interested to see, because there, you know, there seems to be a thought out there that, you know, hockey culture, these guys don't want to be seen as leaving their teammates hanging to dry, so they'll probably all come back. But at the same time, you know, you look at a guy like Max Domi, who certainly could be immunocompromised, and you wouldn't blame him at all for saying, you know what, my health is more important than a play-in series this year. So, you know, will there be any players that do it? It wouldn't surprise me if there's a few, but I tend to think that that number will be small rather than large, and we're not going to see anything to the level that we've seen in some of the other sports like the NBA or Major League Baseball, where you've got many guys choosing to opt out.
It's Brendan Batchelor and Vic Nizar here on Social Distance Central. Reach deep on the way. JT Miller, was he snubbed on the NHL.com Super 16 list? You know Dan Riccio is going to have some fire takes about that. That's all on the way. We'll be back tomorrow with Game of Takes here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.